The House and Senate Tax Conference Committee will come to order. Welcome back to the Capitol. I've seen quite a few very good tans here at the Capitol. Nobody's going to accuse me of having gotten a tan over break. We are going to talk about TIF today. I just want to note a couple of things about the schedule. Today we do have to be done at 11:20. There is a Senate caucus at 11:30, and we have session at noon today. I appreciate the accommodation on the room today. We've been switched in order to accommodate Governor Bush. He is speaking in room 15, but after today, we'll be back to room 15. Our next tax conference committee will be on Thursday morning. And by the end of the hearing today, I'll have some information about what we'll be doing on Thursday. Today, what we've done is invited folks that might like to testify regarding the TIF provisions in, and we may also have some discussion about the differences between the House and the Senate provisions and further information from staff about some of those things. But first, what we'd like to do is begin with a discussion of TIF, and maybe the best thing to do would be to have Senate counsel just remind us of where we're at with the TIF provisions in the two bills.
Madam Chair, members, I will be just perhaps going briefly through the side-by-side to give you an idea of what is in each bill and where we differ and where we're the same. If you look at page 7 of the side-by-side, and I'm actually referring to the side-by-side comparison that the staff put together, not the bill text. A little bit of a shorthand there to explain the differences and the similarities. Article 3 of the House bill is a more general economic development bill. The first several sections of that, going all the way through Section 10 on page 10 of the side-by-side, is a provision dealing with the Minnesota Science and Technology Program, which is not a TIF program. On the bottom of page 10 of the side-by-side, and the Senate does not include that program in its bill. Section 1 of Senate Article 5, which is strictly on tax increment financing, Sections 1 and 2 actually modify provisions that were part of the 2010 jobs bill that had allowed the use of tax increments from existing districts to be used to provide loans or other subsidies or assistance to a development consisting of buildings and ancillary facilities if the municipality found that the project would create or retain jobs in the state, including the construction jobs that would be used in the project. The first section of the Senate bill dealt strictly with economic development districts, and the second was the more general. In both of these sections, the Senate extends the July 1, 2011 deadline that was in last year's jobs bill for 1 year, but both of them provide that extension would not apply to housing projects. Section 11 of the House article is a provision that modifies the pooling rules that are used for housing projects, and that it would enable up to 10% of the increment from a district to be used for owner-occupied housing with a value up to 150% of the average market value of the housing in the city. And there are limitations in there. The market value could not exceed $200,000 in the 7-county metropolitan area or $125,000 elsewhere in the state. The money could be used to acquire the houses, demolish or relocate them, do rehabilitation, site preparation, or pollution cleanup. And this is limited to properties that had 1 to 4 dwelling units that had been vacant for at least 6 months or that were structurally substandard, or to a property that's in foreclosure or that consists of vacant land if that parcel would be used to develop or redevelop housing that met the other three conditions that were listed. The authority would sunset on December 31st, 2016, except that it could continue to be used to pay for outstanding bonds. Section 12 of the House Article 3 deals with a TIF project in the city of Ramsey. There was a law that was enacted in 2010 dealing with this project. The House provision corrects the boundary description that was in the 2010 law that omitted the eastern boundary for the district. The Senate bill only makes this correction, but then the House has a number of other provisions relating to the TIF district in Ramsey that would enable it to make expenditures that are not limited by the typical restriction on the use of increments for redevelopment districts that would require that 90% of the increments would be used to correct the condition that caused the blight. It also provides that increments could be used for costs that were incurred prior to establishing the TIF district, either for land that the city or its housing and redevelopment authority acquired or public improvements installed in the district. The House provision also extends the four-year knockdown rule to a period of 6 years. And the Senate does not, as I said, does not include those last set of, additional qualifications or authorizations for the city of Ramsey. The Senate bill only modifies the district. Section 13 of the House article and Section 5 of the Senate article are identical provisions relating to TIF districts in the city of Lionel Lakes that authorize the city to collect increments from one of its TIF districts through the end of the year 2023. That essentially provides a 10-year extension for that district. If the city chooses to use that authority, it would be required to use the increments that are collected after this time only to pay debt service on bonds that were issued to finance a particular county road interchange and a specific development within the city. These expenditures would not be subject to the pooling restriction or the five-year rule or the limits on the purposes for which the economic development increments could typically be spent. Section 14 of the House bill deals with an authorization of or an allocation of $100,000 to the city of Taylor's Falls for Border City Development Zone. The Senate bill does not include that provision. And Section 4 of the Senate tax increment article authorizes the authority in the city of Cohasset that operates two particular tax increment financing districts to use tax increments from those districts to repay the city for advances that the city made in preparation for the establishment of the district from its general fund. And this would be limited to expenditures that are authorized for uses for tax increments. And then Section 15 of the House article is the appropriation for the from the Minnesota Science and Technology Fund.
Thank you, Ms. Zoff. Tomorrow in the Senate Tax Committee, we are hearing Senator Bonhoff's bill. And Senator Bonhoff's bill is that economic development language that begins with Article 3, Section 1, regarding the Minnesota Science and Technology Program. We had not heard that bill previously, and there's more. That's the one that extends all the way to page 10. And then also on page 13. So will the members of the Senate have not yet heard any of those provisions, and we will hear them tomorrow and get back to the House on what we think after we've had a chance to hear. Questions from members of the committee or comments about the TIF provisions? Members, there are folks that will want to testify, but if you have questions about how any of these provisions operate or some of the comparisons, they would be appropriate. Senator Runbeck, or excuse me, yep. Representative Runbeck, both, I guess.
Madam Chair, and let's see, maybe one of the research people regarding Section 1, the 2010 jobs bill extension. Are there, or is there, do we need to have any additional language in here you know, what kind, for example, how long this the decisions that have been made under this provision and the extension, how long somebody's going to be, or the cities are expected to monitor job growth, report back to the legislature, that sort of thing. I don't know what the actual bill had in it, but it seems like if we think these are creating jobs, there's a responsibility to give us an update, perhaps every year.
Ms. Zoff?
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, there's no particular language that's been added in this year's bill, and I don't recall. I know that the cities have to provide a spending plan to the state auditor for what they anticipate doing with these additional increments. So that is available, and that has been completed for the cities that have already exercised this authority.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, if there could be possibly just some clarifying language, I mean, I think we don't know how this works. And at the city level, is that a high enough, you know, foot level to be making decisions and putting taxpayer dollars at risk for supposed economic development? You know, if there's no other in a small city, if there's no other competing company looking for dollars, I mean, the cities are perhaps going to spend money that may not be a very, you know, well thought out risk, let's just say. It seems to me we just need to know more, and I'd like to see some sort of just qualifying, clarifying language that says, you know, the actual number of jobs, you know, we need that reported back.
Representative Runbeck, I would say I've always been very concerned about some of this with respect to the competitiveness, because we don't want the government competing with private sector investments, because the latter are clearly better for the economy than the former. I'm wondering if your concerns are addressed to particular provisions here or to all provisions, that you're looking for some kind of reporting language on all TIF provisions that come out of our conference committee report, or specific ones?
Madam Chair, I hadn't gone, I guess, that far. It seems to me that the expansion from 2010 is a dramatic, you know, sort of upshifting of this program. So I'm just thinking about this program in particular, because it is specifying jobs, and it is talking about grants. It is talking about subsidies. I think, you know, new ways of using TIF that we haven't used before. And, you know, how effective is this, I guess, in the end? So I think I'd like to see it particularly address this expansion.
So, Representative Runbeck, if I understand, you're talking about the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority.
Oh, I'm sorry,
and
no.
All those grants?
No, I'm on page 10, section 1, the TIF.
And that was, if I remember, that was Senator Senjum's bill, the extension of the TIF for jobs.
Right.
And Chamberlain's.
And Senator Chamberlain was also one of the authors. So it's good that they're on this committee and they can work with you to address your concerns. I don't know whether you all had a hearing in the House on that bill or not.
Mm-hmm. We did, Madam Chair.
Representative Runbeck. We had a lot of very good testimony in support of that bill in the Senate Tax Committee, and so maybe what we should do is plan to have testimony here in the group, and maybe you might want to consider an amendment for that, some kind of reporting provision. But we'll make a note of that, and
great.
We'll
Thanks,
work
Madam
on
Chair.
That one going forward. I appreciate your comments on that. Other questions or comments from members of the committee? Then we do have some folks here that would like to testify. We'll begin with Article 3 in the House, Article 5 in the Senate, starting on page 11 of the side-by-side. We have Matt Brown from the Community Development Specialist City of Coon Rapids. Mr. Brown, are you here? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I am here again on behalf of the City of Coon Rapids. I'm the economic development staff person there, and the city is supportive of extending the TIF provisions for 1 year with respect to economic development projects. In Coon Rapids, we have been able to utilize these provisions, and they have resulted in projects that involve creation of a substantial number of jobs, not only good jobs, but high-paying and high skill level jobs. In one case, we provided gap financing to a small business that is working on a vaccine for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and that project will result in jobs that about 14 jobs that pay in excess of $25 an hour. We're working with another medical device manufacturer on an expansion project that will result in the creation of at least 30 jobs, and those will pay in excess of $30 an hour on average. These are projects that would not have happened without some public sector assistance. In one case, the jobs would have likely left the state, if not left the country. And I am working with another medical device manufacturer on an expansion project as well. So from the city standpoint, we would like to see those provisions with respect to pooled tax increments extended for one more year. We feel that's an important incentive to provide to businesses in the current economic climate. And it is clear that these projects are creating jobs, and when the city has entered into agreements with these companies, we have required that they do create those jobs and provide documentation of it. I should also mention that they are permanent jobs that that in the long term will ripple into other sectors of the economy.
Mr. Brown, have you given some thought to Representative Runbeck's question about what type of reporting the cities might be ready to do to document the development of jobs and the fact that they're going to be created and made permanent?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I can't speak to all examples. I think from our standpoint, there is clear evidence that jobs are being created, and you know, it would be relatively straightforward to provide documentation on what types of jobs and the wage level and skill level that would be possible. I think there is concrete evidence of that in this case.
I would encourage you to work with Representative Runbeck and make sure that I think you're probably in the best position to explain what types of reporting the cities can do under these circumstances. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Brown, was it?
Yes.
Can you just quickly cover, I mean, how did you make the decisions, this company versus this company? Did you, you know, impose kind of a limit on the dollars you would commit? And what type of expenditures did you make?
Yes. We simply went through an application process, much like we would for any tax increment or any project involving tax increment financing or tax abatement. And we have been working with these companies. They were looking at the possibility of expanding, and we worked with them. In terms of the level of the assistance, we look, and it's not 100% concrete, but we look at the number of jobs that are going to be created. We look at the cost of the projects and have some figures. You know, we're only willing to finance a certain percentage of the project, and we're only willing to provide a certain amount of subsidy per job that's created. So those are kind of the criteria we look at when providing assistance, and also, of course, the need for the assistance.
Madam Chair and Mr. Brown, it just sounds a little bit sort of general, but I guess I have concerns. And now the expertise within the city, I mean, what level of business expertise or economic development. What's the background of the people making the decisions?
Mm-hmm. Well, in Coon Rapids, we have two economic development staff people. We work closely when there's an application that, you know, a loan application, obviously we want to ensure that loan is going to be repaid, so we work with a local banker on providing that information. We obviously want to make sound decisions when public subsidy is involved in a business expansion.
Madam Chair, Mr. Absolutely. Brown, are there clawbacks then in your contracts so that at a certain point, can you describe what you'd have done on clawbacks?
There are on the economic development projects. If the jobs are not created or if the project isn't completed, the loan or grant does have to be repaid.
Mr. Brown, I think, you know, Representative Runbeck asked some very good questions, and one of them that she kind of highlighted for me is the process. What is the process? Was the availability of these funds made public in advance? Was it the Community Development Advisory Board that was making these decisions? Did they go to the City Council? I mean, how public was all this decision making?
Yeah, there was a public process. Obviously, in order to free up these funds, a public hearing had to be held by the City Council and the Economic Development Authority, so that was made public before the projects went through the process. And obviously, as with any business subsidy in this amount, there is a public hearing that occurs, and the meeting is advertised, so there are certain provisions that ensure that is a public decision.
Thank you. Other questions or comments from Mr. Brown? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this is necessarily for Mr. Brown, but perhaps for you. Do we know how many cities that have actually participated in this program since the 2010? I know we've got Coon Rapids. Anybody else? Do we know? Or is that something that we'll dive into a little bit later? We'll get a chance to kind of hear more about.
We did hear from, you know, multiple cities in the Senate, and so I know there are other cities affected. In fact, I think Minnetonka is one of them. Ms. Zoff, do you have that information today?
Madam Chair, there is a list that I got from the State Auditor's Office that lists about 18 cities that have used this to date. So this may be a month or two old, but there were at least 18 cities that had used it. And if you want a little bit of additional information, there was a provision in the law that was enacted last year that does require the city to adopt the written spending plan that we mentioned, that's the source of this information. And it has to be adopted or approved by the municipality after a public hearing with published notice in a newspaper. So there is a provision in the current law that requires an open process for that.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Zoff, thank you for that. I think it might be helpful just to have, you know, it was helpful hearing from Mr. Brown from Coon Rapids. Might be helpful to have those cities kind of come in or at least provide us with some kind of report from each of them, just to kind of get a ballpark figure of how that worked and what worked, what didn't work, and so forth. So
I think that
give
would
me
be
more comfort,
our,
I guess.
Well worth our time. And I know that Jen O'Rourke is here, and I don't know if she's prepared to testify about this in particular, but she's on the list of testifiers today, and maybe she would like to speak because she was very persuasive in the Senate Tax Committee on this provision. Ms. O'Rourke, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jennifer Herrick. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I actually did not testify to this piece on the Senate side. Maybe you're thinking of Kevin McHenry from the Metro Cities, who actually headed up that testimony. If I could refer you, we do have a one-page handout that the Metro Cities and the League of Minnesota Cities put together, and at the bottom there are a number of cities. It is not a complete list of who has used this authority. And I think it also includes a few cities that have contacted us saying if we had another year or two, this is something we may be moving forward with in our communities. But to address Representative Anderson's question, we can keep honing in on that list and get you some better information if that's what you'd like. Real quickly, Madam Chair, this is something we brought forward as a bill this year, thanks to Senator Senjum and Representative Loon. We had hearings in both the House and Senate. We're thankful for those. We've got a few folks here today. Matt is one of those to answer the specific kinds of questions that I know you all have. We also support the other provision that's in here, which is the market rate TIF foreclosure language that is in one of, I believe, the House position that's left over from last year's bill.
We may come back to that, Ms. O'Rourke. Mr. McHenry, would you like to speak to this provision?
Sure thing, Madam Chair. Kevin McHenry, I'm from Metro Cities. We represent cities in the 7-county metro area here at the legislature and also at the Met Council. We are very supportive of this provision. In the interim, we do have our policymaking process where our cities come in and talk about the issues. One of the issues on this was that it was such a tight time frame to actually get as much out of it as possible. Some of the issues in putting together some of these deals include just acquiring the land takes time, the tight credit market, and securing investment made it difficult to get the projects going. So what we talked about with our cities was what they asked for is an extension of these provisions. In the end, we think this is something that is a helpful tool to help provide economic development. It's not a silver bullet to just creating jobs, but it is something that that can help spur some development in these tough financial times.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, and then Representative Luncheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple more questions of Mr. Brown. I understand that there's been a little controversy about some of the, and I don't know if it's this particular program of TIF, but just wondering that I think the city bought out a Target, an existing Target or an existing Kmart, is that right? And is that part of this project? And how many dollars are we talking about in total that you are taking from the excess TIF? In total, and then thirdly, I guess, what kind of staffing is in your economic development department?
Mm-hmm.
Largest staff,
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, on the issue of the vacant Target site, that is in fact a redevelopment project in the city that has involved some assembly of land for construction of a city ice arena and community center, as well as some land for private development on the periphery. That project, we have not used the tax increment provisions for that project. We have bonded for parts of that ice arena project. As far as what type of staff we have, there's myself, and I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I function as both a city planner and an economic development person. And then we also have one other economic development staff person.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just to follow up then, Mr. Brown, the size of the excess, the TIF excess that is available to dedicate to this particular provision, the extension of the expansion,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How much is the total dollar amount available?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, we've made available I believe over time we've made available about $700,000 for these various projects. There are, and I don't have the figure offhand, but there are other excess tax increments available in other districts that could be made available, but I don't know that figure offhand.
And just if I might, Madam Chair, because obviously Coon Rapids is a big city.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are you, because you're looking, at the grassroots level, let's just say, are you seeing economic development projects begin to happen on their own because the economy is beginning to turn around? I mean, what are you noticing in terms of permitting and that sort of thing?
It isn't requiring
TIF.
Yeah, overall, I think we've seen a few people kicking tires. I mean, it is clear that the economy is improving, so there's some interest in development. It's my impression, though, that we haven't quite turned the tide, and we're not seeing a substantial number of development projects. I know in terms of single family houses, we've issued permits for just a handful in the last year or so. For commercial projects, we've seen some additions and things like that, but not a whole lot of new buildings, and that's the same same situation with industrial development.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I want to speak strongly for the House position. Both the property tax chair in the House and the chair in the House heard this bill and rejected it, and I think people in this room, you know, would expect me to speak against this, Madam Chair. I am the author of this bill, Senator Senjum. I think you know that. I carried the jobs bill, and Representative Loon carried it in the House this year, and I just heard you're carrying it in the Senate. And what we're talking about is my bill now. And I was looking through the language, and it's, the side-by-sides like this are kind of hard to find things. And if members want to actually read the language that we put together for the jobs bill, it is on the Senate page R6. So, and it's what Senator or what Representative Runbeck is talking is line 79.27. That's the language we wrote to require a job and that the municipality finds for a job.
Representative Lunchuk?
It says page R6.
R6, so we're talking about at the very back.
79.27. Unless, Madam Chair, and I apologize, if we have another bill in our packet where they're red, you know, not landscape, I'm not seeing it. I'm just looking at this big document. It says page R6. And the jobs, the accountability language for the municipality to find that the project will create jobs is 79.27. And...
Madam Chair, are our books different?
Yeah. Our books may be different, Representative Wincheski.
That's what I have. Article 3. And Madam Chair, see, I see Ms. Zoff is actually looking at the bill the way that I think we're accustomed to look at them. But we've got them in this sort of documentation, and I think without being able to cite page numbers.
Representative Wincheski, will you just pause for just a minute while everybody gets a chance to find it? So if you go to the side-by-side and you look for the start of Article 3,
Is
everybody with us now?
Right.
Anybody still struggling to find it? We're going to put some tabs in these for the next meeting. I think would be a good suggestion since they're by page numbers go according to the articles. So, okay, I'm sorry, Representative Wincheski.
Well,
I think everybody's onto the language now.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, maybe want to try to speak to Senator Senjum a little bit and Representative Loon. And Representative Loon did a nice job with her hearings in the House. And she was carrying this as well. And as I stated, the two House chairs didn't choose to put this in the bill. And I think they made the right decision. And I want to just, I know you're not going to make this decision today. And I just hope we can all just think about this a little bit. The testimony we've heard, and I think you will hear a lot more in this committee, in the conference committee, everybody wants this. And for good reason. It's free money coming from the taxpayers. So, Senator Senjum, I hope you'll think about this. You will get a line of architects and contractors and building trades folks and cities and developers and economic development authorities and all kinds of folks who will come and say, let us do this, because it's not their money. And I carry this. So I understand this bill. In fact, I wrote it. I'm willing to be corrected here, but I'm pretty sure the way the jobs bill worked, and I know a lot of people were involved with that, is, I wrote the bill. I held it from Senator Bach, who wanted to do much more than this, and I refused to go along with that. I negotiated the bill with, and I think people in the room know this, with Governor Plenty, and came up with all the provisions in a way that I could live with in a restrained way, and I still think what we did last year was too much. I'd hate to see us do more of it. Governor Plenty agreed to do it. He insisted it be paid for. Folks will now recall the way it was paid for with the repeal of the low-income motor fuels tax. That's what paid for the jobs bill. The reason I did it, and I said this in the House, but I want, if I may, I want Senator Senjum and you, Madam Chair, to understand just my thinking, and I know I'm just a minority member who's just having a thought here, but it wasn't for a rolling economic development fund. Mr. Brown is talking about how this would be great for economic development and test fires, and that's true. That's not what it was for. It was to create jobs. And what it was intended to do was to spur the construction economy. I was not compelled by the architects and the contractors and all the people who make money with public dollars building things. I was compelled to get people off the bench. And so the goal was very quickly, short-term, projects in the pipeline, ready to go with development agreements, would go underway. We would break down the TIF rules, free them from the TIF rules, which are there to protect taxpayers, and instead let them free open a little bit to get the construction trades off the bench who had about 40% unemployment. That's not no longer the case. You know, we're not in that same economy. I think people know that. And I think the temptation is there's so many people who want this, you know, to just do it again for a year. And then next year will be another year. And then next year will be another year. And, you know, I think if you convince the chair of the House Tax Committee in the end and the chair of the Property Tax Committee in the end, I hope you will consider very seriously tightening your provision. You know, 1 year, my goodness. I mean, this was 2 years. They had 2 years to sort of, they, you know, everybody came and said, these are ready to go, and yep, we'll do them. They had 2 years, and they still haven't done them. You know, this was to get things moving quickly, and let's not kid ourselves. The property taxpayers pay for these. This is a subsidy from everybody else to these developments. And, you know, I think we just need to, you know, if people want to continue to do that in jobs, you know, I've noted, Madam Chair, that you made a choice, or possibly, you know, I don't know if it was Senator Senjum's choice. I didn't listen to the testimony, Madam Chair. Maybe it was yours, Senator Rosen. I don't know who. But you took out the housing. And I can see, you know, I can see that that's one way to limit it. However, the goal of the bill was to create construction of any kind. It was to create construction of any kind. It was not to give a subsidy to private developers. So, you know, that's one way you can do some limiting. I mean, I think the better way would be to have these people step forward and show you a development agreement. You know, to just say, well, we're almost there. I mean, that's what they said before. And, you know, when we did the bill, you know, I gave them 2 years, and I thought, you know, you thought there were 500 projects that were going to happen, and it's 18. And people have to understand what's being allowed for in Senator Senjum's bill, which is you can use it for retail. I mean, not housing, but for retail. I mean, I think there's just a lot of work on this provision. I hope the Senate will come around to the House's position here. But if not, I would love to have more conversations with all those, including Representative Loon, who's worked hard on this, to really think about ways to do this, to tighten this up. Because, you know, I said to Representative Loon at the time, you know, the pressure is huge, and it takes a lot of guts to stand up to these people and say no. And I did do it because the pressure, you know, was immense for the whole legislature. The governor wanted a jobs bill. The House wanted a jobs bill. The Senate wanted a jobs bill. And it passed bipartisanly, overwhelmingly. Think about everybody in the whole legislature voted for this bill. But we now are kind of out of the bottom of the trough on this. And what is the public purpose now for all the taxpayers to provide these subsidies? And I just think we need to think about that. I know Senator Senjum has an interest on other large construction projects that might appear in other bills, and that would certainly be another way to give construction projects a bump. But I appreciate the time, Madam Chair. I just think there's a lot in here, and you know, as somebody who both understands cities and counties very well, and I know your cities once were huge users of TIF. In fact, they led the state in kind of getting up there in the amount of tax base to hurting everyone else in your area. And I've heard you speak about that and reining that in. But you also know that when you allow these cities to do this, they get to leverage the county tax bases. So they're hurting the counties they sit in as well. So, you know, I get, as a former city council member, why people want to do this. But it is our taxpayers who end up footing the bill for this. And I just hope we'll think long and hard about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I appreciate all of your comments, Representative Franceschi. I'm guessing there are some comments in response and other questions. I would just say that I do think that restrictions make some sense, and I did offer the amendment to take out affordable housing. I think there is more that we can do, if not just taking the whole House, you know, position here. Representative Loon, and then Senator Rosen, and then Senator Senjum. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize to the witnesses and that for coming in late, and this is a provision that I have worked hard on, and I do support, and I support the Senate position on this. And I would say to my friend Representative Franceschi, you know, we had some of this testimony in property tax division as well, but, you know, the provision, and One question I wanted to raise was how long this has been in place, because I'm not sure it's been in place for 2 years if it was in the 2010 job spell. So I don't think it's actually been in place for two years. But, you know, that was in response and to extraordinary times. We have come through the worst recession this country has seen probably in 50 years. And I know long-time economic developers in my area who, I mean, their family has been in the business for 50-plus years, whose bank was calling their credit and their loans. And these people weren't going anywhere because of the severity of the recession and the credit crisis that was going on. So there were things occurring in our economy that we had not seen in decades. And trying to pull our economy out of that called for some, in my opinion, some extraordinary measures. And perhaps you would agree with that, given your concerns about using TIF, and I certainly acknowledge that. You know, the reason I think this is worthy of doing a one-year extension, and I would accept, you know, certainly your suggestions and guidance on making some changes, and the Senate did sort of narrow the projects for which this sort of TIF exception could be used. But, you know, I don't think we have seen the big boom return to construction. It's been extremely slow, and of all the industries that are lagging behind their recovery, construction continues to be one of those. And you can call it economic development and versus job creation. I see those two things as really going hand in hand. But allowing these projects who are in the pipeline to move forward, to be completed under this, in my mind, makes sense. It allows some communities who have worked hard and tried to get some projects off the ground when there was absolutely no credit, no economic development happening, no job creation happening because of the economy. They've, with this assistance, found a way to bring some things to their communities to add jobs. And I think that's something we want to continue. Do we want to continue it for a long time into the future? No. The original bill I introduced, and I think Senator Semjans may have been the same, was 2 years. We've agreed to limit it to 1 year. We could certainly talk about additional restrictions or tightening up of that language. But, you know, I think there's some – I've heard from a number of members whose communities have some things in the pipeline now that would be squelched if we didn't do this extension, and I am very concerned about that.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I, too, apologize for being late. There's a few things going on this morning with the Human Services. But I was just wondering, and perhaps Chair Davids could say what the jobs bill you have on your side to create jobs, I mean, what's in place. Perhaps you already went through it. I don't know, but is there anything that the House has brought to the table as far as job creation going forward?
Senator Rosen, I would just say one of the things that we identified is the Minnesota Science and Technology provisions and grants that are in the House bill that are not in the Senate bill, and we're going to have a hearing in the regular Senate Tax Committee tomorrow to hear Senator Bonhoff's bill with respect to those grants, and I think those are intended to be grants for job creators and such. But Representative Davids may have additional comments about that.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And to Senator Rosen's question, as you suggested, we did we changed ours a little bit. We originally had kind of a TIF for the science and technology area. We took the TIF part away from that and just came out with some grants. We have some research and development issues here. We also went specifically to a couple cities. I think it was Lionel Lakes, and we had what was the one in Chisago County?
Taylor's Falls.
And we had some things on Ramsey. So more specific that way, not as quite as general as the Senate was looking at.
Thank you.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, the Representative Lincheski, and this is going to be a grand adventure going forward. But, Senator, Representative, I'm just kind of wondering what I heard What I heard from Coon, is it Coon Rapids?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sounded pretty good. And some of, and maybe perhaps I would say almost all of what I read here is looking pretty good on this Metro City sheet in terms of of things going forward as a result of this bill, even though it's been a relatively short time period for these things to emerge. And you can, I guess, like TIF or not. I'm sort of a TIF person that considers it a but-for. I know certainly in Rochester, our downtown area, I would hate to see it now had it not been for TIF starting in 1978. It would be virtually, well, I won't even say. It would not be good, put it that way. And so, you know, but-for you invest, but-for you do a TIF program, you really kind of end up with virtually nothing unless you're lucky enough to have a private sector developer come in and do a project without any kind of assistance. And even in my town, that's rare. But I just kind of want to dialogue a little bit further because I think some of these projects are pretty good. And I rather believe most of them probably wouldn't be on this sheet, you know, but for this piece of legislation. Maybe I'm wrong.
Representative Runbeck.
Did you want to respond?
Or to that point, Representative Lencheski?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I hope we can have more conversations, Senator Senjum and Madam Chair, with you and all the Senate conferees. It does sound really good. I mean, that's the temptation, yeah. But it's other people's money. And I understand why cities, metro cities, League of Minnesota cities, all these folks would want this bill because they supported it when I did it. And they get to leverage. If you're the mayor of Rochester, the mayor of Bloomington, you get to use the whole county's tax base to give a developer assistance. And I think you just said it best, you know, but for assistance. I mean, I thought we weren't, you know, I mean, if we're going to be capitalists and expect people to be conservative, people should not need a public subsidy to do their developments, except in a very rare circumstance with a public purpose, like to clean up blight. And that's not what's going on in this bill. And I understand why people really salivate at these things, because the taxpayers are going to give them money to develop against competitors who don't get that same subsidy. And so, you know, at some point, I mean, I think over the last 30 years in TIF in the legislature, long before I came, people started realizing it was a giveaway and started tightening it and closing it down. And I don't think anyone, including me, is suggesting abolishing TIF. We have six kinds in the state that are legal, and nobody ever has to come to the legislature with a bill to have them. And, you know, we have a lot of legislators who've never served on the tax committee, I think we know them, who think that the only way you get a TIF district in your state, in your city, is to come to the legislature. That's just absolutely not true. The majority of TIF that's going on in the state is done by mayors every day and councils, and they don't need legislative approval. We have it in statute, and they use them all the time. We have more than 2,000 TIF districts in the state of Minnesota. Those are all publicly subsidized. And to say now we need to have more Uber subsidies going on when the economy is starting to improve, I understand why people think it's good. I really think most developers and most businesses are not subsidized. We have literally tens of thousands of businesses, hundreds of thousands in this state who don't receive this subsidy, and yet a select few do. So, I think we just need to continue to talk about it and think about it in limited time with limited money, how much we're going to ask the other property taxpayers to subsidize these developments. And I appreciate the time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to ask a couple more questions of Mr. Brown. And looking at the statute language, can you just itemize for us, Mr. Brown? Because I think it'll be helpful to get a clearer picture. You know, of the dollars that you have committed to this project or these projects already, how many were research and development, because that's one of the types? How many were for administrative expenditures, or how many, you know, what percent of the dollars? Were there situations where the city took an equity investment in a project? That appears to be one other version. And then any idea how many construction jobs? Because obviously that was the sort of the primary purpose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's really a lot of obviously different things that a mm-hmm. city could spend money on. So do you have any rundown of
right,
that?
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, I know in the case of these industrial expansion projects, in the case of BioVest, which was the firm working on the vaccine, they're creating 14 jobs. All of those are research and development jobs. In the other case, which is a company called MedRad, about half of the jobs were administration and research and development, and the other half were manufacturing jobs. They're creating between 30 and 45 jobs. I don't have a clear answer at this point as far as how many construction jobs are being created, since the projects haven't they're just getting underway right now. But certainly that could be documented at a later date.
Madam Chair, Mr. Brown, I would appreciate if you could do that, bring that to us for a follow-up meeting. I mean, it does sound as though a number of the jobs were research and development, and frankly, I mean, if there was a more risky way to spend money, I can't imagine. Research and development, I mean, really, I think it's very interesting. And the fact that a lot of these then were not actual construction jobs, that's interesting too. So I'd sure appreciate the information.
Representative Brunbeck, I have to disagree with you. I think that research and development jobs are good jobs. That's what we want to encourage in the state of Minnesota. So I'm surprised. I mean, maybe construction jobs might be, in your view, better, but I can't think of better types of jobs to be encouraging for Minnesotans than research and development jobs, and I'm seeing some nods in agreement. So we may have a disagreement about that. But
I'm just thinking about the risk nature. I mean, it takes a whole lot of luck and a whole lot of, you know, incredible factors coming together for a small startup, biotech or medtech company to make it, you know. So what are the chances, the odds, I guess, are very, you know, probably really extraordinary. That's just my view, but I think riskiness is a consideration. And tax dollars, I mean, somebody really needs to understand that business, you know, to put the dollars there. But
well, to you and also to Representative Lencheski, this was a bill that was passed with bipartisan support last year. I was a big supporter of the jobs bill last year because we did face extraordinary circumstances last year, and I'm not sure that anyone can convince me that we have come out of the economic recession or that what was good for 1 year last year isn't good for one more year at this point, because we're still trying to encourage that growth in the economy and exactly those kinds of startup companies in the city of Coon Rapids to develop research and development programs. That's exactly what we want to encourage, and I'm not sure that the 12-month window was long enough given the slow growth in the economy coming back. There are still a lot of people that worked very hard to respond to our jobs bill. It was an incentive program, and 12 months is an awfully short time to respond and get those programs up and running. And so I'm glad that there are cities out there that have taken this in hand and are willing to go and work hard to grow their communities. And to your point, Representative Lencheski, I have to say that I'm a strong advocate for local control. And I think that these cities can be trusted to care about their taxpayers. I don't think that we are the only ones that care about taxpayers. It's funny me arguing this with you, but nonetheless, I do think that these city elected officials and officials working with them do care about their tax base, do care about their taxpayers, do care about their county, do work with their county officials. So I don't think that there's any big divorce here. I think everybody's working together to encourage growth in our economy. And so it's hard to say that it's bad now, even though it was good a year ago. And so what kind of extension do we want to do? I think that's fair. And do we want to restrict it and make sure that it's the types of jobs and the growth that we meant to encourage? I think those are very fair things, just speaking my point of view and not on behalf of the Senate. But I have a feeling that Senator Rosen might agree on the jobs, on the research and development. Senator Rosen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do, absolutely. And perhaps tomorrow when we have the science technology, or this week, the hearing on that, which I'm also a co-author on, we can have a little briefing from the BioBusiness Alliance, Dale Wallstrom, to talk about where we've come from because of research and development and where we stand in the state and what we have at stake in this state. We wouldn't have the Medtronics, the Boston Scientifics, the Mayos, if we did not start with research and development. So I think that's critical in this state, that we continue to keep that healthy, keep our intellectual property here, and encourage them to stay here and develop here, because that's where the jobs are going to go.
Thank you. We have with us Mr. Schreier from Brooklyn Park, who might like to weigh into this conversation. Mr. Schreier, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here and talk a couple bills, but I just wanted to comment on this extension. It was a wonderful bill that was passed last year, but really we only had about a year and a half when it was passed because we need our development to take place soon, 2010. And what we found is, for example, in Brooklyn Park, our big development that we thought was ready to go, all of a sudden had to, because the economy was still bad, had to go back through the corporate their corporation to get approval to do this particular expansion. And then now that was approved. Now they're out working with the lenders again to get that project funded, so that wouldn't happen in the time frame. However, the good news is that we had two other projects that we did some marketing, and after the first of the year when there was a little more activity, not a lot, that we had one biotech company that happened to come in, and we are doing it quite quickly in 6 months, that we'll be able to make the deadline and get that business expanded. And we have another company coming in that wants to upgrade their building, and there's been some talk of that, so they can make that an old industrial building to make that more marketable, raise the ceilings, sprinkle it to bring in a new business, and that'll happen as well. I'm also a member, or Brooklyn Park is also a member of the Jobs Coalition, which is made up of all the folks that Representative Lencheski talked about, but primarily labor. And if you listen to that group talk, labor still has one of the highest percentages of unemployed in the state of Minnesota. And I think still last year this bill was passed out as a jobs component, and we probably still need that jobs component on a lot of these smaller projects. I mean, there are some big projects that are being talked about, but really what cities do for the most part deal with these more manageable projects. The other item is I think we as development professionals shouldn't look at this as an ongoing, you know, I'd like it, but ongoing pool of money into economic development, but, you know, really look at it as a one-year extension, because the economy will improve probably in 2 years from now, but you do have another, if this would pass, the one-year extension is a sunset. And I think the point is on, is there some kind of putting in I'll call it a clawback provision on seeing if outside of the construction job, seeing if permanent jobs are being retained is probably a good idea in Brooklyn Park and in other places I've worked. We have put those provisions in contracts, and when jobs have went down, our TIF investment has been altered, or there was a take back. And I think there was a question on administrative fees, and in Brooklyn Park, all our TIF goes into the cost of the projects. We pay for administrative fees from other sources.
Mr. Schreier, can you describe a little bit the projects that the City of Brooklyn Park is working on?
Again, we're working on, with this bill, we're working on, the one that'll get closed and started by the deadline is a biotechnology business that actually makes stents. The other one is the expansion of that or sprinkle and work on, raise the ceilings in a warehouse to make it more marketable. And the other one that wasn't going to get done by the deadline, that had to go back through their back to the corporate headquarters, which is out east, and now the developer is working on a bank loan, is also a biotech medical device manufacturing firm that's going to be expanded on a piece of property next to their existing facility. And they're actually going to consolidate. They have some other in another state in the region bring in a small, you know, consolidate some of that manufacturing into this plant in Brooklyn Park.
Mr. Chair, if I heard you correctly, then the company is headquartered out of state,
has
current operations here, and is willing to expand its current operations in your city.
Yes.
With the use of these development dollars.
Yes. So it was a good bill, and I think sunsets are good, and I like those, and clawbacks. I like those a lot, too, to make sure the developer does what they say they're going to do.
Well, and then, Mr. Schrar, you might be willing to work with Mr. Brown and Representative Runbeck on what types of clawbacks could be imposed in this legislation, and also reporting requirements. Are you willing to work on some of those?
Madam Chair, we do operate under the business subsidy as well. Now, that's on the books.
Thank you. Are you Ms. Bolton?
Yes, I am.
Bolton from Kennedy and Graven.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us today. Do you have comments about the provisions we're discussing right now?
Well, just to add to what Mr. Schreier was saying, Madam Chair, the business subsidy law that already exists under Minnesota law requires that any subsidy that doesn't qualify for certain exemptions would be subject to a reporting requirement to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and that there's a two-year window for creating those jobs, and then a requirement that those businesses remain in business for 5 years.
Thank you. Sir, are you here to testify regarding these
provisions? Madam Chair, if I could be very brief. My name is Chris Eng. I'm the Executive Director of the Chisago County Economic Development Authority, and I'm also past president of MAPSID, which is the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. And this was one of our top priorities for counties this year. Every year, AMC adopts the MAPSID platform, and this extension of the Tax Increment Jobs Bill was very high on our list. So I just, of the 87 counties, 42 members of MAPSID support this. So I just wanted to say that.
Can you say again what your organization, the acronym, can you say that
MAPSID.
Right.
It's
can you say
Minnesota what? Association of Professional County Economic Developers.
Thank you. And are all 87 counties members of your organization?
No, there are 42 county members that have members from that are part of MAPSID.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question of the gentleman from Brooklyn Park, and I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Bob Schreier.
Schreier. Okay. I'm just wondering if it is clear to you or clear to anybody just exactly what deadline means the most in this process. I mean, here we're saying that the construction needs to have been developed by July 1st, 2012. Is that the right deadline, or is there an earlier deadline that gives people time to be involved? I mean, is there an application deadline that might make more sense?
Mr. Schreier.
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, last year when the bill was passed, we thought the deadline that was in the bill might be tight, and it was. I can't really speak to July, the 2012 is a good deadline, but right now, I would say that it took until after the first of the year, I think, for folks that maybe needed the assistance to come forward because we had our spending plan in place, and We can put together development deals and get it through our EDA rather quickly. We need about a six-month time frame on new projects. The other project, though, that was in place that we thought was going to happen had to run through all their banking and corporate approvals again. And now, hopefully, if everybody is correct that the economy is improving, that that may not be quite an issue. So I would say the one-year extension is fine. I know the concern is, okay, you're going to come back next year for another year extension. Who knows? If we're hoping the economy turns so we can put everybody to work. We can get some projects out there and get taxes in the cities, and that's what we're looking for. So I think a year is fine with the other provisions you've been talking about.
Mr. Schreier, to follow up on Representative Runbeck's question, the company that had to go back for corporate approvals, was there a written agreement signed between the city and that entity prior that would have met the deadline, or was that maybe the problem here?
We had a lot of processes going, Madam Chair, going through on that system. The city was going to sell the adjacent piece of land. We were working through appraisals and that to get the value on that. The company submitted plans to us, and we were doing a lot of work on the project. We didn't have an agreement in place because we typically don't try and put the agreement in place till we see an end or when we would actually start construction. So we were kind of doing our due diligence, talking about the terms. I typically like bringing the deal terms to our EDA when we're feel as though we got a deal. We don't usually bring things to our EDA who are the same as the council until we feel quite confident that we're going to see the thing till the end. But we had been working, we've been working with these folks for 2 years, and a lot of it is we had to value our piece of property. We did get approval, though, from our council that we could sell that city land. So we did do that. So we're still confident that we're going to get this deal done. But, you know, we need some gap financing.
Thank you. Other questions for these folks? If not, I know there are folks here that would like to speak about the pooling provisions in the House bill. And maybe the same folks.
Yeah.
So, yes, Mr. Schreier.
Madam Chair, I'm still Bob Schreier, Director of Community Development, Brooklyn Park, and they asked me to testify on the pooling provision, which this would help cities assist in their foreclosure efforts. And I testified to either one or both the committees that in Brooklyn Park, we have about 1,200 either vacant or foreclosed properties in the city. And one of the things that we think that would help is we could set up a program. Right now, we depend on NSP dollars and state dollars to get housing back in service. We have 104 houses that we've treated. And in Brooklyn Park, we do it a little differently. We work with the private developers. We enable the private or nonprofit developers to go in and buy these homes, rehab them, and then sell them on the market to qualified buyers, which it's at 80% using the federal funds, and then we put some subsidy in using the federal funds, and that's about $40,000 a home. We feel that this would open up some additional funds to work with these developers, and we would actually expand our buyer pool to the 150% of average. So this would assist us in buying these houses. In Brooklyn Park, again, we don't buy the houses ourselves because we don't want to be owning a bunch of houses. We work with the developers and select houses in neighborhoods that start to see some foreclosure issues in order to keep our neighborhood strong and healthy. So we pick out potential houses throughout the neighborhood. Also, this would expand that we could use the dollars in all parts of the cities right now where how the federal funds work. We're limited on some census tracts, so this would broaden our efforts. And then I guess this wasn't a bill last year that somehow didn't get included into a final bill. I think Kevin or Patty can talk more about that. But this would be a good bill in wake of the foreclosures, which we see again that this is another issue that'll still be probably with us for another 2 years or so.
Thank you, Mr. Schreier. Any questions for Mr. Schreier? Anyone else would like to testify on this provision? Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Patricia Nauman, I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. I just want to add one comment. As Mr. Schreier pointed out, this was a provision that was included in the omnibus tax bill last year that got passed, but the language was inadvertently left out of the bill. This year we did, at the request of the Minnesota Realtors Association, we did tighten up the language a little bit to make sure that properties are actually in foreclosure under the section or paragraph C. So that language is new this year, and it's basically a tightening that we put in to accommodate some concerns around making sure that properties were actually in foreclosure. So I just wanted to add that piece. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Ms. Nauman on this issue? We have other testifiers here today as well. We have Kurt Ulrich from City of Ramsey, Colin McGlone from City Council in Ramsey, and Heidi Nelson. Are you folks here? Great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present to you this morning about the requested modifications for our TIF district. I assume that's the issue that you're wanting us to talk about.
And unless you wanted to address either of the other provisions that we've talked about today, but if not, then we're on to the City of Ramsey.
All right. Madam Chair, we do want to express our support for the extension of the special legislation with regard to utilizing funds from other districts. And so we do have a project right now that we are pending getting that project into the ground. We're pushing against that end of June commence date. Certainly another year of flexibility would help us. Our new TIF district that we're going to be talking with you about today that we've been in front of you before on is a TIF district in our downtown area. And so this is a project that we took over ownership of that a year ago in June. And so just the timing in order to get those projects out of the ground, get the developers engaged and restructure and reset the bar on that project has just taken a bit of time. And so we would appreciate your consideration of the extension of that language as well. But our existing TIF district that we were provided last year in the session, we are in front of you asking for some clarifications on the language. There was a House bill and then a Senate bill, of course, and so we are looking to see that if some of the provisions that were included in the House language could be extended by the work of this committee, and that would be to the 4 year period under the statute, the subdivision 6, that would be extended to 6 years versus the 4 years. That's the knockdown rule. And then also the ability to capture back some of the expenses that we incurred as part of our taking ownership of the land and taking ownership of the project. We also are seeking some clarification on subdivision 4J on that legislation. So I do have a handout. We have utilized this with both of the House and Senate committees. We're happy to pass this around again if you think it would be useful for the group to have some background.
I would encourage that. I think we have some folks that can pass it out for you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we also have a council member with us today. He had to step out for a moment. Hopefully he'll be joining us here, but also just to express his support for these requests.
Can I ask, we have this provision in the Senate bill that would extend for 1 year, certain provisions in that jobs bill. Is that not sufficient to meet the needs? It seems to me you've got other exemptions and special provisions. Why does Ramsey need all this special treatment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is our downtown project that in June of 2009, we stepped in and purchased 150 acres of the land in our downtown project. We had a private developer engaged, and that developer ran into some financial trouble. This is a key project for us that it is our downtown. It is on the North Star commuter rail line. We're hoping to begin construction on our North Star station within the next 9 months to a year. The request for this special TIF district was to allow us to have a revenue stream to fund some of the public improvements that would be required for the project, in addition to providing some assistance to the development community that's going to come and invest in our community. So this was a new TIF district that was authorized last year. We're asking for some clarifying language this year, as well as some modifications that would allow for more flexibility for this project.
Madam Chair. May I also respond to that?
You would introduce yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sir.
My name is Kurt Ulrich, City Administrator with City of Ramsey.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. One of the things that makes Ramsey a little bit unique is that this is the city is a large owner of land, 150 acres within this 400-acre tax increment district. A lot of about 90% of the tax increment is going towards public improvement projects such as a highway interchange and a rail station, which will spur development on throughout the whole district. And so we're looking at this as a public project primarily. The tax increment goes towards public projects, which would traditionally be funded either by the county, the local unit, or the state. And so we're taking the position that the tax increment would allow us to step in with our local contribution and allow those projects to move forward to spur economic development of this project. And without that tax increment and some of the flexibility that we've programmed into the original language, it just makes the tax increment less effective in doing that. And to the point of the one-year extension, this is a large project over many years, perhaps 10 to 20-year period in terms of where it gets to full development. There are numerous parcels. The one-year extension really doesn't get us where we need to go in terms of these public improvements that have to be done and the types of development in the time period that we'll see with this development.
If I'm not mistaken, Ramsey was before the legislature last year and got its TIF approved. And one of the reasons why the Senate has adopted its provision is because there were some boundary corrections. That made sense to me. But why do you need additional authority now beyond the one-year extension everybody else has? What are you doing differently, or what's the expansion of the project from last year?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to call your attention on the backside of the project, or the backside of the flyer, I'm sorry. The exemption on the four-year knockdown rule, we talked about the fact that we took down 150 acres. The TIF district covers roughly about 400 acres. This is a long-term investment project. We are not, you know, the probability of us being able to spur all of the development that we'd like to see come from this TIF district within that brief time frame is going to be very difficult. So we're looking for some flexibility on that. The House language did extended that period to 6 years, which is, you know, more time for us to realize to get developers to the table and get projects to come out of the ground. We do, we are asking for the flexibility on Subdivision 4. We have two projects that are currently under construction that we'd like to be able to reach back and capture that value for. One of those is the new Department of Veterans Affairs outpatient clinic, as well as an Alina medical clinic. So those two projects are currently coming out of the ground, so we'd like the flexibility on that 18 month to go back and capture that value.
Mr. Ulrich, you said that 90% of the TIF financing will go towards public purpose projects. What's the other 10%?
Madam Chair, that portion is to go towards, in part, to assist private developments. There was a portion of this that was anticipated that would go towards private developments and administrative costs of the city. So the that's primarily where that would go.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ulrich, just a little more on this project. Is the development plan all put together? I mean, do you know what you want to see on the 150 acres? And the remaining acres, then, the 250 out of the 400, what's happening with that? And I don't know. do you have private buyers that might take some of this land off your hands? It seems to me that is a tremendous amount of, you know, of burden to be carrying. What are the discussions going on in Ramsey?
Mr. Ulrich.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, the discussions in Ramsey are that we need to keep this development going. It was the original intent of the purchase of the property was to turn it back to private development as soon as the market would allow it. Currently, as you know, the market is not very strong. It continues to be very, very weak. We have purchased the property, but fully, if we could turn it around to a private development the city would certainly do that. That is the original intent. We do have significant public improvements that have to be made, we feel, to make this product or project viable to the market. The access to Highway 10 as well as the rail station are very important components to this development. It was envisioned as a transit-oriented development. We need monies to build that rail station to make it viable. We need better highway access to make the project viable, and that will make it more attractive to private buyers. It is the intent to turn this over again to private buyers ultimately. Right now we're finding, because the market is so tight, lending is so tight, the banks are unwilling to lend without some city participation in many cases. We're doing this one step at a time. It's not the Mega Mall. It's not Medtronic. It's individual 2 to 3 acre projects. It's in some cases we're trying to market 50 acres as a piece of development to go to a private development. And to answer your question about has this development been planned out, I would say yes, it has extensively, but we need to maintain the flexibility to respond to the market and potential buyers for this property. But we do have this planned as a mixed-use development, as our documents will show, and we'll continue to move forward and try to do a development that's attractive to the market and will allow somebody to purchase it at a future date. And all these improvements and all these proposals and the legislation goes towards that end goal of selling this back to the private sector, making a viable economic development project overall, and moving forward for the long term, the 10 to 20 year and on into the future.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, Mr. Ulrich, what is the plan then for retail? You were saying this is your downtown. Are you looking still to do some kind of a retail on the scale, say, of, well, not, it wouldn't be Maple Grove, but I mean some sort of retail? How's that fit into it all?
Yes, Madam Chair, committee members, this project does include about 50 acres of retail development. Actually, maybe a little bit more than that, but it is a large component of this. It's not the scale of Maple Grove, as you indicated, but it does include, as part of the mixed use, retail component, primarily on the west side of the development. The city's portion of 50 acres is included in that, and then there are some other private parcels within this district that would also be included along Highway 10.
Madam Chair and Mr. Ulrich, so industrial park versus retail, is this something you're still weighing? I mean, if there's more market, and who decides that, of course, but if there's more market for an industrial park, is that something you're willing to do, or are you set on doing more retail? Because it does seem that that's going to be slower, perhaps.
Yes, Madam Chair. The response to that is we will continue to be flexible. Our industrial park area in Ramsey is located to the east of this project. Currently, these are existing industrial parks, which have been very successful in terms of small, up to 300 or 400 employee businesses, but we have a number of those businesses within our industrial park. The city is planning a new industrial park to the east along the Highway 10 corridor, and that would be serviced by the Armstrong Interchange, which is proposed to be funded through this tax increment project. So we're setting aside a portion of the land within the scope of this project to be developed as a future industrial park. The retail component could be supplanted by an office user, for example, so a corporate campus or something like that. I believe the city would be more than willing to look at in terms of a use for this property, and particularly if the retail isn't strong enough to go into this market and utilize the land that's available.
Mr. Ulrich, I appreciate the fact that your city is working to be flexible and creative under the circumstances, but that's exactly why the project gives me some pause. I'm missing the certainty, and I'm missing the predictability and the purpose. I'm missing it. And so you all may have some work to do to convince members at this table that there's a very strong plan, that you know exactly what's going to happen with this money, and that you can show the public purpose in doing it. And I'm not convinced yet. I'm just speaking for myself, but it seems unwieldy. And perhaps Mr. Councilman McGlone would like to speak to that. Mr. McGlone, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'll speak directly to the certainty. One thing was for certain. This project got me elected. On election day, if you'd have told me your crystal ball was working better than mine and that the council would have bought this project, I would have, in no uncertain terms, told you that you were nuts. But we got elected. We saw the need. We bought the project reluctantly. And what did that do? Well, it certainly saved the taxpayers' previous investment of $12.5 million in infrastructure. That was a local investment that would have been lost through the bankruptcy process. We were able to, only as the owner of that project, be able to eliminate the previous development agreement that was encumbering the project in the first place during the best of markets. So we were able to do that. We decided we were going to break down the walls and allow this thing to be able to have the best chance at success. So I think we're doing a very good job of that. Had we not bought the project, the VA clinic would not be there today. And they're going to be opening in within a couple of months. Had we not bought the project, Alina would not be there today. Had we not bought the project, I could bore you all day with the facts. Had we not bought the project, a 90-acre school complex bordering the project would not be under construction this spring. Had we not bought the project, Pack Charter School, which is in the project, would not be expanding today to add even virtual school and things of that nature, ball fields, the whole gamut of things a school would do. We are in the unenviable position of being the owners of the project. No one on our council is fully comfortable with that, and when the market does turn around, we will turn it back to the private side. I'd like to speak to some of the comments I heard earlier. I am in the construction trades. I've worked in that trade as before I had gray hair. To think that we could have an economic rebound in a year that would make any difference to anything is just not realistic. I'm years away from rehiring the employees I sent to the unemployment line. So anything that can be done, whether it's going to build a building for a retail operation, whether it's going to be build for a rail station or what have you. The purpose of the bill originally was to get people working. I can't see a better site in all of Minnesota than Ramsey's core project for that purpose. We've got a lot of things cooking, and we don't want to fill you full of promises and hopes. We'd rather under-promise and over-deliver. We have a development team in place since we bought the project a little more than a year ago. There's a lot of dirt flying in Ramsey. There'll be this construction season. You won't recognize it. We're doing the things that need to be done. The council is firmly ready to do what it takes to make it happen. So with that, I'll rest.
And Madam Chair, if I may follow up on your question, the certainty is in the cost of the public improvements, for sure. The $30 million interchange on Highway 10 is an issue that the city needs to work with. The rail station is about a $14 million project that we need to provide a local share of funding. The county has been a good partner with us on both those projects. They provide half of the funding on the rail station planning as well as half of the funding on the interchange planning and design. They have passed a resolution indicating support for the TIF legislation, so they know that their tax base, as well as ours, is going towards this project and this development, and they've been a partner. And we do need the flexibility to try to resurrect this development using a good portion of the local share taxes to do that. But we feel the end result will be worth it, and that this project will get going because of the city's interest and involvement in it. Thank you.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind when Representative Lencheski speaks about this issue is sometimes these cities go pretty far with TIF and they actually end up doing things that the private sector would do anyway. And that certainly happened in my city, the city of Chanhassen. We encouraged TIF. I was not on the city council, but encouraged TIF. And what we ended up building was Target and Byerly's and businesses that were coming to serve the community anyway. And I would ask you both to really look at whether or not you've already gotten to that point where you have invested city funds to the point where the private sector is going to come anyway now because you're building Alina and because you're building the clinic and you're going to build the interchange. Do you really need the other aspects of this affordable housing? Or have you already created an economic zone that is of interest already? I think at some point we all at this table have to ask that question. Is some of this going to come anyway because of the work you've already done? Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, I've thought about the Ramsey provision a lot over the years, and I think it's Representative Abler's bill. Is that right? I can't. I'm not sure who the senator.
And Senator Jungbauer.
Okay. And I think this is a great example, as you've been highlighting, and when the public who may be watching your meeting today, Madam Chair, here's, we're going to use these things for public improvements. I mean, what those are they're things to assist the development. So if you're resident XYZ living on a street, you don't really care if the development has this nice parking ramp or has this, these other entities. But I heard the council member, what he was saying, and I do think this Ramsey development has a problem here. I mean, the way I remember hearing about it is, we can have a judgment about who, and I don't think this council member was part of that group, who decided that they should let the bonds to start doing all this development or putting in the improvements for a developer who then went bankrupt and left the citizens holding the bag. And this is the danger of TIF. There it is. But these folks are stuck with it. And so their predecessors or somebody, thought that was going to be a good deal. It didn't pan out. They've got 400 acres. And so I think Representative Abler has asked for a lot more than actually what Chair David's put in the bill. And I think everybody has a view about, why this maybe you don't want to see cities getting to these positions. And remember, they're leveraging the county tax base as well as they're doing this. But I kind of feel for them on a level where they're stuck with it now. They're stuck with it now. So I understand when whoever the developer was who went bankrupt left you guys holding the bag with all the acreage. I mean, I think the chair is right to sort of want to see some inset, you know, what's going to happen to make sure these things don't get repeated. And I understand there's some new elected officials and maybe we'll change that. But generally, you know, people like these things, and because they sometimes work, you know, the legislature tends to think they all work, and they actually don't work often, and the taxpayers pay for them. And so that's what's happening right now. They've got $12 million invested into this thing. Representative Abler is being asked, and Senator Jungbauer, to sort of solve this problem now. And I think them not being able to answer Representative Runbeck's questions about what's your plan is just a symptom of the fact they don't have a developer. So they don't have a plan, and they're trying to lure a developer, and that's kind of, you know, all TIF 101, I think, why people ought to be hesitant about these things. Yet we've all seen legislators bipartisanly who have problems, and they're trying to ask the legislature to give them tools to get out of these problems. And, you know, Senator Ortman, my city, you know, when I was in college, decided to give tax increment financing to the Mall of America. You know, I mean, come on. Where is a more developable piece of land in North America? And not only did they give it to phase one of the mall when I was in college, they gave it to phase two. All those years ago, was passed by the legislature with Governor Perpich, gave them a super uber TIF of all time that we, you know, have don't allow those anymore, but it's still clocking away, and the taxpayers are still throwing money into that development. And I think we all, it's the job of legislators who serve on the tax committees in the House and Senate to get into the, you know, down into the weeds in this stuff and have a policy decision as boring as it is to everybody else. I mean, there's probably less than 10 legislators in the state of Minnesota who care about tax increment financing, and most don't even want to know how it works. But the fact is, it's real money. And you know, I appreciate this as a struggle, and I don't know what you and Chair Davis will work out with Ramsey and with Senator Jungbauer and Representative Abler, but I think they're in a pickle. But it is kind of an education moment for folks in this room, I think, to listen to them.
Mr. Ulrich.
Madam Chair, if I may respond to the question of planning, and we do have this land pretty much planned out the way we'd like to see it developed. What we had, and we can show you those plans if you'd like, but almost block to block about what type of use would go on each piece. What we found with the original development, the original developer had the same thing. That development, as was pointed out, was unsuccessful, went into bankruptcy. The city ended up picking it up. We wanted to make sure that we were not going to make that same mistake, that it doesn't matter what our dreams are and what we'd love to have there as a development. What matters is, what is the market going to provide us, and how can we encourage that development? And so my point was that not that we're not planned, because we are, but that if Medtronic came in tomorrow and said, we want to build a corporate campus there, we are interested in that value, and we would jump on that. So we have the flexibility, because the city is in ownership of the land, to do that and respond to that. So I don't want to leave here with the impression that this isn't planned, because the plans are there for the type of development that would occur based on what we know now and what we believe might be a market now for the land that's out there.
But that's exactly my question, Mr. Ulrich. Why do you believe that won't happen or occur anyway? Because you've already invested so much, and you've already, you know, ensured some development through the clinic and through Alina. It sounds like you have made a lot of progress, and I think the council member is very convincing that the city really did need to buy that property. I'm absolutely convinced you made a great decision. But I'm just wondering, why do you think that it's not already attractive enough without adding taxpayer funds to incent further development?
Madam Chair, 2 points. One would be the existing investment in the land, and when the property went bankrupt, both the purchase price of the city, near $6 million, plus the assessments that were on the property, an additional $7 million that were on the property in terms of public improvements that had already been made. The second point was the fact that this development will take a long time. There are significant public expenditures that remain to be made, and we are not quite there in terms of making this an attractive product for the market. the interchange, for example, $30 million. The rail station and other local roadway improvements that have to be made to make this a viable product, I would say we're not quite there. We're not at the point. We can turn this over to the private market with the lending conditions the way they are, the development industry sector the way it is at this point. This project is not quite ready to go to market. We can step in as a public entity and do the work that needs to be done, put the institutions in place and put the funding mechanisms in place that will allow this development to happen and be successful, but we are not there yet. We need to continue to push this project and make these types of changes as well as do the work on the city's behalf and the county's behalf to move this project along.
Mr. Ulrich, if we extend the jobs portion, the one-year extension of TIF in the Senate provision, would that apply to our city? I just want to confirm.
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes. We have looked at that for individual projects. In fact, we had an apartment project we were looking at using that provision for. The planning actually extended us beyond the 1 year or the time frame deadline. So because, you know, typically an economic development project or any development project will take 1 or 2 years, and we were running up against the deadline with that project, so the extension in that case would be helpful to individual projects, but not it has a limited impact and benefit to the project as a whole. But we'd continue to use it for individual projects.
Thank you. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just more of a comment, maybe more of a question about where is the banking industry, the lending industry, in all of this? And we really haven't talked about it. We could do as much as we want to legislatively, but are the banks and the loans going to come forth, and are they cooperating? So it's just more of a comment. Perhaps somebody can give us maybe some forecast of what they're hoping to do, if they're going to start easing up on some of these loans. And I don't know. That's just a comment.
Ms. Nelson?
Yes.
Chair, members of the committee, I just want to comment a little bit on where the banks are in this. The banks are part of this. We have a project, we referenced an apartment project that we have a lender that's engaged on that project, but the city has a role in that in terms of we're providing some assistance to that project. But there are private lenders coming to the table. I think the important part about what we're trying to do here is that the days of a big retail development coming to a corner, building an interchange, building all the improvements, I think we're a long ways from getting back from those days. And so our role in this and what we're trying to do here to spur development is to make those public investments that create the environment for the private industry to come in and make an investment. So that's our number one priority, is to utilize this district and the legislation that you've provided us to make those public improvements to allow for economic development to occur. The banking industry will absolutely be hand in hand with us on this. And, you know, nobody's looking to the city to finance their deal. It's the banking industry that we need to be a partner with, and the developer, to everybody come forward together to get projects done today.
Chair David, did you have a question?
Well, yes, I just a little clarification on the second or the back page of the handout. If you look at the on top of the second provision, now providing exemption of MS 469.177, and then talk about the current legislation, what they want to do is they want to go back and collect from two projects, I believe, that have already started. I guess it would be a question for Mr. Michael in House Research. Has anything like this ever been done before in the history of the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I cannot think of an instance where by special law the legislature has authorized that sort of exemption. There were instances before the prohibition on this was enacted into law where cities, in fact, engaged in this practice of seeing that building permits were pulled, and then they created a TIF district to capture that value. The legislature then imposed these restrictions that are in general law, and even after that restriction was in general law, I know the legislative auditor in their study that was published back in 1986 found that there were still a few cities that were actually continuing to do that process, but I don't believe that the legislature, I can't recall any instance where the legislature has sanctioned that type of, but the reason I think why the city is requesting it here, which is sort of underlying element of this request, is that, you know, you can think about TIF as a way to encourage development, but then there's also this component that it's also a way that the city is financing infrastructure, and it reduces their cost of financing infrastructure, and the city is in the difficult position where they've essentially built the infrastructure, and now they're looking for ways to sort of reduce their city taxpayers' cost of paying for that, and this would be a mechanism to sort of spread that to the county. So this is sort of more to think about this as a cost-sharing mechanism probably more than anything else, but it's not in the House bill, so it's really not in either bill now.
Well, yeah, and thank you, Mr. Michael, and it's in neither the Senate bill or the House bill. I would just point that out. So I give the city an A-plus for creativity, but I think there are some issues here that are somewhat problematic that we'll have to take a much harder look at. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
you. And Mr. Ulrich, with that provision, what kind of value were you trying to recapture?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, each project would generate between $160,000 and $200,000 annually in tax revenue. And I do want to point out that the county, this provision was taken to the county as part of the legislation, and that they're not opposed to us using their portion to help pay back the public infrastructure costs through this TIF district. So they have been a supportive partner on this effort as well.
Representative or Councilman McGlone, do you have final comments on this for the committee?
Yes. The idea that we don't have a plan, we do have a plan. The plan is to be flexible. We needed to eliminate the master development agreement because that is a legal and binding contract between a developer and the city or whoever they're developing, you know, whatever jurisdiction that is. What we've done is we've abolished the master development agreement so that we could enter into spot development agreements. When we have a 230-unit apartment complex that wants to go in because of the possibility of the future rail. Well, we needed to be able to develop that parcel and enter into a development agreement on that parcel. The market is not and will not be for some time what we all remember it. Nobody's building. No developers coming into town and taking down 400 acres. It's just not going to happen, and not going to happen anytime soon. So the idea that we could develop in any fashion anytime soon like it used to be needs to be on the table with the group here. So,
thank you. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps just a takeoff on Representative David's question, and probably for me, so I understand it. But at the front bottom of this sheet, it talks about the Ramsey TIS district is undeveloped raw land, and what I'm trying to understand then, and somewhere along the line, I've come to believe this is 150 acres. Maybe that's in testimony. But then to the VA clinic and the Alina clinic, are they built and are they on the 150 acres?
Ms. Nelson.
Chair, Representative, the 150 acres that we refer to is the land that the city's Housing and Redevelopment Authority acquired. The TIF district boundaries in and of itself are broader than the 150 acres that we acquired. There is another landowner in the project that owns about 30 acres. The Alina project and the VA project are on that other developer's land. We have two projects within our 150 that are poised to break ground this summer. and maybe to the notion of the 400 acres, really what we tried to capture here in this district is four quadrants of opportunity around the Armstrong and US 10 interchange. We have opportunities to the west side for office park, more industrial type uses, and then certainly in the core, a combination of retail, housing, some office, a very mixed use centered around the rail station. And then on the south quadrant, there's additional opportunity for office. So the district is much broader than the 150 that we own. We have a special interest and a special role here because of our ownership and because we've taken on the role of developer here and engaged a development team to bring the project forward.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, are the two clinics then within the TIF district? Okay, so there, and so I understand, is the proposal then to go back, albeit it sounds like they're built, but to capture the tax increment, if you will, and reapply it to the district, even though initially it wasn't, neither one of these were tax increment finance projects?
Chair and Senator Senjum, yes, both of those clinics are currently under construction. They both pulled their building permits. The Atlanta Clinic pulled their permit in July of last summer. The VA pulled their permit in November of last year. So the intent would be to go back and capture that value to provide for the construction of the public infrastructure. Both of these projects will have a significant impact for transit and transportation in the project, and so we'd like to capture that value to be able to use that towards the construction of the infrastructure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Chair Davids?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to encourage the Senate to look at a lot closer at the House position, what we actually did here. The Property Tax Division did some work here, some very thoughtful work, I think. In the provisions we have in there, we didn't go as far as the City of Ramsey necessarily wanted, but I think we specifically narrowed in to hopefully help them through this process a bit. So I hope that we can look a little bit closer at the work that the House did on this issue here. I'd also just, if I could, just like to make a little announcement. Well, maybe as we wrap up, I'll make an announcement for the next meeting.
Thank you. Other questions or comments, Madam Chair? Are there folks here that would like to testify this morning about any of the TIF provisions that we've been considering or that have not yet come up but related to TIF? Seeing none, then Chair Davids, maybe you'd like to announce plans for our next meeting?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The next meeting will be Thursday at 8:30 a.m. in room 15, unless we have some other guest come to take the room from us. 8:30. We'll be discussing income and business tax provisions. So in case you didn't know, Governor Bush is over in room 15. And over the last weekend here, I was in Crawford, Texas, and we were trying to find the Bush Ranch, and we went down this road. It said road closed. And we were greeted by a gentleman named Earl from the Secret Service. It was kind of interesting, and he said that this is private property and we may want to leave. And so you know what we did? We left. Beautiful country.
Nothing further. We are adjourned until Thursday at 8:30 a.m. in room 15.
What could be better than a Secret Service?